Off the Ball, GAA.
The line to us, telling us that we would have a pitch, and then the line to us about saying that they'd line it out and to try and keep us there. They try to keep us there on the false pretenses, like, and you'd be very disappointed in that. Like.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Yellow iPod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the LOI Pod and Off the Ball. Stephen here with you again this week. And what an interesting weekend it was. All sorts of storylines and also some big, big results. But before we go any further, let's hear what happened last Friday on Off the Ball.
Jacor, it is Richmond Park. It's a big, big match tonight. A big, big Dublin derby. The top of the table, Saints against the champions, the Hoops, who are currently sitting in third place and just a point behind. Gives it to Jack Byrne. Byrne now to the edge of the box here, trying to find space for a shot. Hits a shot. Oh, it's into the back of the net. What a goal from Jack Byrne. Absolutely sensational stuff there. 9 minutes of action here at Richmond Park. St. Patrick's Athletic 0, Shamrock Rovers 1.
Jack Byrne, he's an absolute maverick, isn't he?
Still in the early stage of the game, and Shamrock Rovers looking full control here.
They've started the game absolutely brilliant. They have, honestly, they're a joy to watch. Not just the possession, but it's possession with real intent. It is.
So that's really sad to see. Sean Hoare going off in the 18th minute, and he's replaced by Tom Gravosti after pulling up with that injury. Ball sent way down the pitch there, and there we have it. The full-time whistle has been blown, and all 3 points are going back to Tallaght Stadium. You'd nearly forget about the goal. It was so long ago. But Shamrock Rovers really were the dominant team throughout the 90 minutes, deservedly taking all 3 points.
Although we haven't shown the quality that we've shown in all our other home games, you could have easily earned a draw in that game. You know, we had enough chances to equalise, and it wouldn't have flattered us, I think, if we'd have drawn the game. But disappointed to lose.
I thought we were very good. I thought some of our play was excellent. We controlled the game for the majority of it. We're just a little bit disappointed and frustrated that we haven't capitalised on some of the really good opportunities in the final third. We had some really good moments, and we were a little bit sloppy in that regard, and that's a bit frustrating. We will get better.
There you have it. That is Stephen Bradley, the head coach of Shamrock Rovers, speaking after Stephen Kenny, the boss at St. Patrick's Athletic, and myself and Richie Tell, of course, on commentary duty last Friday night. The St. Patrick's Athletic 1-0 defeat to Shamrock Rovers in the SSE Airtricity Premier Division. With the other results there on Friday night, of course, two games fell foul of the weather. Bohemians losing at home by 2-1, and also having a man sent off against Sligo Rovers, and Derry City also a man down in their game, but drawing 2-2 away to Dundalk. So with the standings there, sorry, I should say the league positions at the moment, Shamrock Rovers back on top of the table for the first time since they were crowned champions. St. Pat's in second place, 2 points behind them, on the same amount of points as Bohemians, and then Dundalk just 2 points further back. It's Galway in fifth, Shells in sixth, Derry City down in seventh position on 11 points, nine off the top three, crucially 11 points off the leaders. And then it's Drogheda United on 10 points, third from bottom, with Sligo Rovers behind them on 8 and Waterford on 4. Lads, we will talk about football, but as we know, you know, some things are far more important about football, and that's our family, our lives and everything that goes on outside it. I think we're all, you know, well, most people, I suppose, around the league, I think we'd heard... I know myself and Vinny maybe had perhaps heard some whispers from around Tallaght Stadium, but I think a lot of people taken aback by the news when the interview went out on the Shamrock Rovers social media channels last weekend. Their midfielder Gary O'Neill revealing why he's been out of the reckoning since last October. And of course, revealing that it was due to a cancer diagnosis. A really lovely interview with himself and the Shamrock Rovers media team. And he kind of gave the full details of everything he went through. And thankfully, saying in his interview that he's now got the all clear. He's back doing some running, back doing a lot of individual training, and saying that I'm a footballer again now. This is my job. I want to get back on the pitch. I think it's important people know that this isn't going to define me. And I think that says a lot, Vinny, about the character of Gary O'Neill.
Yeah, and I think the way he sort of I suppose he kept it private, huge. And look, he's got the all clear, so when he's freely talking about now, so hopefully that's the end of it and he's able to move on to the next chapter in his life. He's still a relatively young man, so you'd like to think there's still some football left in him, you know, in terms of his recovery. But at 31 years of age, I mean, depending on the treatment, it can leave a bit of a scar. So hopefully that's not the case and Gary's back playing football soon. And for someone to win the league title 5 times and to be so much of the centre of what Rovers did, particularly, I go back to that 2021, them 2 seasons, I think when Rovers were at their very best, it was around that time. And for me, it was around that time and he was right in the middle of that. So I'm still not over. He had a big moment in the FAI Cup final in 2019, so I'm not going to forgive him for that at the moment.
The winning penalty, wasn't it, Vinny?
Yeah, winning penalty. Still not over that. I still go to bed thinking about that. So Gary O'Neill is haunting me. But at the same time, I'm delighted with the news from him. Look, the word legend and all of that stuff is thrown around too much. Gary is like a lot of people. He's had an outstanding career, but the way he's carried himself and kept all this stuff himself and waiting for the right moment tells you that he's just a great person, and I'm delighted for him he's got that news. And what an outstanding footballer Rovers are, an outstanding football club, an outstanding team at the moment. And the reason they're an outstanding team and dominant team is down to the likes of him and what he's done over the last 5 or 6 years at the club.
Yeah, and I think, listen, Rover supporters won't need us telling them how good Gary O'Neill is. I just wonder, Gareth, if he maybe outside of Shamrock Rovers, if his footballing talent maybe is a pre... I've always felt he's a little bit underrated just for the fact that he was such a crucial cog, or has been over the years, in that team. And I'm sure he will be doing everything he can to get himself back to fit and to the level that he was at and to get back into that Shamrock Rovers reckoning. But I think, you know, just him even saying like that he didn't want this diagnosis and going through that fight that he went through and thankfully coming out the other end with the all clear. But I think it says a lot about, it almost kind of, it's emblematic of the kind of footballer that he is.
100%, and it's one of those characters when you're in a team, he doesn't get all the headlines, he just goes about his business. But if you asked his teammates or even players that played against him, who would you want in your team? It's going to be someone like him. I've had them, Vinny's had them in your team, and they're appreciated so much internally, more so than externally. And as you say, I mean, it's incredible that the club were able to give him the privacy that he needed to deal with the situation and the diagnosis and get himself back, but then to have the bravery to come out and talk about it, I mean, that will create so much more awareness by it as well. So he's done incredible work that way as well. And the fact that he's in the all clear and hoping, and you can hear it during the interview, his determination to get back playing football. I mean, he'll come back now, get himself fit and be flying, and hopefully get himself in the Rovers team and get, he's only, what is he, only 30?
31, yeah.
So I mean, he's got 4 or 5 good years ahead of him. So great to see him back. Delighted to see that he's well, and can't wait to see him on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Gary, if you are watching or listening, best wishes from all of us here at Off the Ball. It's great to see that you are back on the pitch and training again. Hopefully we'll see you back in the green and white hoops once again very soon. Lads, speaking of the green and white hoops, Pats and Rovers, our feature game last Friday. I don't like to dwell too much on the games that happened last weekend, because I think by this stage of the week, everybody's kind of, they've done all that. This is a modernist show. We like to push on. We like to move things forward. But listen, Pats against Shamrock Rovers, it was a kind of an important game in the wider title talk, because Shamrock Rovers were coming to the team that were top of the table. They hadn't put back-to-back wins together yet this season. What did you make of it, Vinny? I know you were there for Virgin Media. And Joseph Garrett, I think he might have actually got the Man of the Match award right this time.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I thought, Mr. Steve-O, I thought so many people from that sort of family of coaches, I'm going to call it that, make that fatal error when they head up to play Shamrock Rovers, they match them up. So Forrester, Key, Levy, Bagley and Lennon played in that boxing midfield, and they went with that sort of, they might say they do that, but they don't do that same sort of system. And the difference is Rovers are seasoned pros at doing that system. See, you look at the goal. The goal is a great example of it, where they're going down the right-hand side and all of a sudden Jack Bond just peels away into the pocket of space. He switched the ball out to him, into that left channel. He's able to drive at people and he ultimately takes a deflection. But Shamrock Rovers were absolutely outstanding for a large period of that game. Take nothing away from Pats in terms of the chances they created. They probably had, ironically, one or two of the best chances of the game. But and you heard Bradley's comments. They were disappointed he didn't win that by 2-3 because they were that dominant. So special mention to Victor Zavilna. I thought he was, like, he's become a real man on the pitch, the way he receives it and all of that stuff. But worrying how bad Pats were, I thought tactically they got it completely wrong. But take nothing away from Rovers, and something that may have been missed is not just on the ball, off the ball, their work rate was good as I've seen any team in a long, long time. They did not let Pats settle. Pats, Redmond had a good bit of the ball at different stages, just had no passes into midfield, and if he did, it was forced and there was pressure all over them. So Rovers were about 9 points better than everybody else.
I knew it was coming.
Listen, we don't do any reactive comments on this show. Just, it's interesting you say that, Finney. I'm not sure if you saw the whole game, Gareth, and do chip in whenever you feel like. But Finney, I think you've hit on something there. It wasn't even the way it was Rovers' performance off the ball. That's what really struck me, because when there was a Rovers player in possession of the ball, it was almost like, you know, Richie Taylor even said in commentary, he said Pats were almost, they were standing off, they just weren't getting into their faces. Every time a Pats player got the ball, there was two, maybe three green and white shirts around them. They just weren't giving the Pats man in possession a moment's peace with the ball. And I think that was the winning of the game, really, I think.
It was. And that's why I touch on the system. And some people don't like you talking about systems and everything. I thought there was a bit of uncertainty of Pats in terms of where he should be and shouldn't be. It was obviously a slight change tactically to what he'd been doing. So, and I think that's the difference. So many people, as I said, make that fatal error. The only way of beating Rovers is not matching them and think you're going to be better than them on the day. Wolves have given you a template every so often where they do what Rovers did to Pats, where they took a run all over them. So the work rate and that hunger and the desire from the Shamrock Rovers players, and it wasn't just like, it was Bourke. Whenever the back three of Pats got it was Bourke, it was Jack Bourne, it was Victor. So it was people, the flair players, for want of a better word. So when they're doing that, then you have a real, real chance. Like, so I thought it's the best performance I've seen from Rovers in a couple of years. And and because of that, it was work rate. And also then the beauty of, say, someone like Corey O'Sullivan or Subbawale coming in a strange way, Subbawale might make them better from an attacking point of view. And I love Dan Cleary, but every so often he became the right back, stable, or the overlapping right back from the right of a back three, where that's the beauty of that system. If you get players that can play in the back three.
Yeah,
I might come back to that part of
how Rovers play. And listen, I think, you know, people listening do appreciate just how teams are playing and how you view these systems. Just quickly on Pats then, Vinny, like, and listen, I did kind of make the mistake with Stephen Kenny in my post-match saying, like, you know, referring to Luke Turner as a full-back, and I understand he did play them as a back three, but it did seem like Breslin was so far up the pitch for most of the game that Turner might as well have been a full-back. I understand Brown was trying to get, you know, Brown was kind of dropping deep and, you know, he was attacking as well, but they didn't seem to be getting the same on the other side from Breslin. I don't know, was that intentional or how did you see that?
I think it was, and that's why I said there wasn't a cohesiveness to Pat's attack. So at times when Redmond came out from the back three down his side, he had that option of King Levy and James Brown. And that triangle wasn't bad every so often. But on the other side, they didn't have that same flair. Chris Forrester was in it a little bit. Chris knows how to play as a number 10, for argument's sake. He's been playing high up the pitch. But I just think they got it wrong. They got it wrong tactically. I think McClelland coming out of the team as well for Breslin meant they lost a little bit of attack and threat. And I know against Rovers, you feel if they shut up shop a little bit, maybe that's why Breslin, more of a natural defender, played. But they were just disjointed, disjointed all night. Lacked hunger, lacked a little bit of desire, which is a terrible thing to say about them. As I said, look, McGinty made one outstanding save as well, to be fair, from Edmondson. But that aside, Pats was second best for a long period. So Lennon looks like he's lacking a bit of match sharpness. Barry Baggery's done really well for them. But again, they were getting in each other's way, where Rovers are completely different in the system.
You come to the part of the pitch I wanted to mention to Gareth, because I think both me and you would have been surprised when we saw the team sheet. Where was Darren Nugent? I know you're a big fan, Gareth. Were you surprised that he didn't start?
Yeah, and kind of that then maybe look at, right, who's starting and where are they going to play and what system are they going to play and how much, Donny touched on it, how much sharp fitness or match fitness have they got? Forrester hasn't played much, Lennon hasn't played much, and you can kind of get away with it against the other teams that maybe won't keep the ball as much or won't be running after the ball as much. But against Rovers, the way they're playing at the minute, you're going to be doing a lot of running. And not only that, and kind of not the pivot on the Rovers, look how much youthful legs they've got in the team now as well. The bleeding of the young players by Rovers is unbelievably impressive and seamless as well when they're going so well. But the likes of Bagley, Lennon hasn't played much, Forrester hasn't played much, Cian Levy hasn't played that much as well, he's been out injured. It's a tough, tough game to go back into. And just on the Turner and O'Breslin, Pat's played the same way against Derry when Derry went up to Inchicore recently. This time it was McClelland on the left and they pushed Turner right on and it worked really well on the night. So maybe they were trying that again and it just didn't work as well. But that's something we've seen from Pat's before. But no, I think don't get me wrong, Lennon, Forrester and Levy, they'll have more minutes in their legs and they'll be better for it. But it might have been a game too early.
Well, our feature game this Friday night is, of course, no surprises, the big Dublin derby. Vinnie Perth, you will be there with Jonathan and Jonathan Higgins. And that's Friday night, 8 o'clock kickoff. It will be broadcasting from Tallaght Stadium from 7 o'clock on Off the Ball on News Talk. And you can get on the Go Loud app as well. Vinnie, you talked about that kind of Sabo Wally on the right-hand side and Cody O'Sullivan on the left-hand side. I wonder, and listen, no disrespect to Lee Grace or to Dan Cleary, I just wonder with the pace that both Sabo Wally and Cody O'Sullivan have, those tandem attacks they like to run down the left and right-hand sides, be with whichever winger, Danny Grant or whoever it is on the right or the left, how dangerous or how big of a threat that could be for Bohemians this Friday night?
Yeah, I think, first of all, before we go any further, like, Cleary, Lopez and Grace have been the foundation of what's been brilliant about Rovers for a long period of time. So we're not suggesting they're done or anything like that.
No.
Grace has had a few injuries and Dan has an injury. But the difference is when you're a dominant team, certain weeks, there's weeks for Sabo Wally to be right wing back and there's other weeks where he's a right side centre half of a back three. And like that point you make, that speed and power he has to get himself forward. Same with Cody O'Sullivan. So Cody O'Sullivan and Danny Grant linked up so well, overlaps, underlaps all over the place. And when you think of pace, well, Rainey, Sabo Wally, Grant and Cody O'Sullivan in the wide areas. If I was ever critical of Rovers, it's often been sometimes they're a little bit slow in their build-up and their play. And they still are playing that sort of way. But what them two give them in that back three is serious running power, overlaps, not afraid to get forward. And that, in turn, forces you back as a team. And then there's just no way out against them. So I think there'll be times where you'll see Grace, Lopez and Cleary in certain matches, horses for courses, and that's the beauty of the squad Bradley has put together now, that there'll be times where they need to dig in and certain matches that will suit the three of them, big, strong players. And there's other matches where I think the Cody O'Sullivan, Lopez and Sabo Wally combination is going to be brilliant for them and gives them an extra attacking dimension.
It must leave gaps, though, Gareth, that maybe Bohemians can try and find. Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, they beat them recently. I mean, there's absolutely kind of positions where they can go. I thought Bowes, although they got beat at the weekend, they've got enough firepower to go and challenge them. It's going to be difficult, especially the way Shamrock Rovers are playing. I mean, I thought they were unbelievable for the first 45 minutes against Derry. Obviously, I didn't see the match at the weekend, but it sounds as if they were just as good. And we've got to remember as well, this is the Stephen Bradley Bohemians, or sorry, Shamrock Rovers, are obviously just getting going. Usually they hit their form just before Europe. So it's quite ominous for the other teams that they're going so well so soon in the season. And to have so many youthful players in the team as well, with that energy, with the formation they play, it's going to be difficult for Bowes, but I think Bowes have got to, they've got to get a reaction. I mean, Alan Reynolds, after the defeat the other night, he's got to be going in there going, we need a performance from everyone here, and we got to go and get ourselves back into the title race.
You know what, Steve-O, it's really interesting. Bowes are probably the team over the last couple of years that caused Rovers most problems. And it's because they showed them no respect. And they went at that back three we spoke about. And their running power, we remember going back to, you know, they nearly played false nines against Rovers at different stages. And that messes the head with that back three we spoke about and running power. So, it's going to be fascinating who starts for Bowes up front. If it's Colin Whelan, expect him to be not going up against Lopez, he'd be in a little pocket and he'd be trying to spin people over beyond them runners, whether it's Tierney or Parsons going the other way, for example. So Rovers have to be up for it in terms of they have to show that same off-the-ball work ethic as they did against Pats. Otherwise, Bowes will cause them all sorts of problems. They are the one team that can cause them a huge amount of problems.
Yeah. And look, I know you, Vinny, we were maybe talking before we got the show together, but we obviously all do feel Shamrock Rovers are going to win the title, I think, this season, and we've kind of said it from the start. The Pico Lopez thing, though, is looming. That's we're getting closer to the World Cup now, and when he goes out, like, how damaging do you think that could be, or how... You know, who's going to stand in there for him? Will it be Adam Matthews? Could it be Enda Stevens? Could it be somebody else? Like, how hard are they going to find it without Pico Lopez there? Because he is a talisman, really, at the back for them.
Yeah, I think it depends. Grace and Cleary's injury is huge for that. At least having two or one of them at different stages is going to be huge. So I think getting Cleary back fit, which I think Dan is only a week or two away, it looks like. Spoke to him before the Pats game. Didn't give loads away, but it's only a week or two away. It's having Cleary and Grace with O'Sullivan and all those other names you mentioned. That's the key, having three or four different options. So there'll be certain days where, you know, you're up against certain strikers that you're not worried about the battle. That's different. And there'll be other days where you're worried about a bit of pace. So that will, and that's, I go back to it, that's the quality of Bradley's squad. He can pick horses for courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Steve-O, just on that, that was the one thing that we picked out at the beginning of the season where Shamrock Rovers could be come undone, essentially, is Pico leaves and, God forbid, Cleary and Grace get injured, which they have done. That's what I was saying. Grace was so important this season for them to step into to Pico in the middle. But then you look at Corey O'Sullivan. I mean, he's played 9 out of the 10 games. He's been man of the match in quite a few of them. He's been exceptional. And Subawali has come in and had the ground running without any problems at all, playing right wing back and now right of a three. So he's kind of, Stephen Bradley, without us knowing, but he's kind of just got rid of that question mark or that trapdoor that once Pico leaves, that there could be problems. Mm. Incredible again in the recruitment department.
Absolutely. Just finally on Bowes, like, they, you know, get reduced to 10 men, they lose to Sligo Rovers, a match they're expecting, or I suppose the supporters and everybody else were expecting them to win. It was the last match of Alan Reynolds' ban. So look, they should be looking, Vinny, I suppose, to really bounce back from that really poor result at home. You know, Reynolds back in the dugout. I'm not sure if that would have made a difference over the last three games. But yeah, Dawson Devoy also missing last week. Douglas James Taylor come off the bench as well. He seems to be fit again. So, is there much there, do you think, to kind of give Bohemian supporters a bit of hope going to Tallaght Stadium?
There is. The form against Rovers gives them real hope. But the results over the last couple of weeks haven't been good enough for Rovers apart from Bowles, I don't think. I think they're better than what the results have shown. They have a real clear problem with finding a settled game, a settled way of playing. They're not putting the ball in the back of net enough for the quality they have. Whether it's been people playing left wing, centre, there's been a lot of changes. Ross Tierney's a great example of that. Left wing, centre, they just need a few people to spark in the forward areas. Colin Whelan needs to get goals for them, or you know, James Taylor needs to get fit and start scoring them goals. I feared at the start of the season that defensively they weren't strong enough. That hasn't been a problem, but I've always said I think there's a health warning that I think they could deal with getting to the next window and getting that an outstanding centre half in to join them. That's what I feel. And I know people will go, that's nonsense because they've kept a lot of clean sheets, but I think the last week or two we've started to see signs of a little bit of vulnerability in that area. So I think they need to be better.
Yeah, I just see so many changes every time I see a team sheet from Bowles, different positions, and even that continuity, that relationships that you build up with a player, whether it be a right back, a right midfield, left back, left midfield, there's very few of that. And even in the league, I mean, we're talking about Rovers being so consistent now over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and they're starting to come to the fore. That's what happens. You can't just change a team and put somebody in a new position, whether it's muscle memory or vision or when to pass it, when not to pass it. These things be built up through weeks and weeks and weeks, and there's just so much changes. I mean, even looking at the match the other night, I mean, once they went behind in the 49th minute, that Ryan Burke with a header and injury time was really the only good clear-cut chance that they had. I mean, that's not good enough if you're going for the title against somebody who's second or third from bottom. And I think that fluidity is just not there yet. At the beginning of the season, over the last 7 or 8 games, it was centre halves getting goals that were getting them there. Not creating enough chances is a problem. I did love the goal though. Myers runs for the goal. We talked about their wingers running off Whelan, running off the passes from Diallo and Flores. Wingers getting into the box and getting beyond the front man, either Tierney, Parsons, Myers. That's, I think, where the real threat and the real goals should be coming from.
Yep, should be a great game. 8 o'clock kickoff at Talletts on Off the Ball from 7 o'clock.
Insurance isn't one size fits all. That's why drivers have enjoyed Progressive's Name Your Price tool for years now. With the Name Your Price tool, you tell them what you want to pay, and they'll show you options that fit your budget. So whether you're picking out your first policy or just looking for something that works better for you and your family, they make it easy to see your options. Visit Progressive.com. Find a rate that works for you with the Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Lads, Sligo Rovers versus Waterford. This feels like a really big game this weekend. Waterford, of course, we've known all about their struggles over the last few weeks. They had a game called off, of course, because of the bad weather last Friday night, and now take on Sligo Rovers. That's going to be on Saturday night at the Showgrounds. Is it a disadvantage for Waterford for Sligo that Waterford haven't played? Like, the longer build up to it, does it give John Daly more time with his players to kind of get a game plan together to beat Sligo Rovers, Gareth? Or do you think this John Russell, you know, coming into this game, they've had 8 days, coming off the back of a massive win in Dublin against one of the top teams in the league, who are you kind of fancying going into this one?
Yeah, no, momentum's huge. I think Sligo, off the back of that one, playing games, again, partnerships, it's in the legs. I feel that they've got the slight advantage with this as well. Don't get me wrong, John Daly will have a lot to work on, and he will put the work in. We know that about him. So they'll be chomping at the bit for this game, and they'll know they're already 4 points behind them. They're going away to Sligo. If they were to lose that, that would bring Sligo up to 11 and leave Waterford at 4. That then becomes a big gap, even at this stage of the season. So the momentum for me will be with Sligo. I mean, that was a huge, huge one away to Bowes. No one really saw that coming. Nobody could predict it. Again, they defended quite well. They scored some nice goals. Set piece, it looked like a well-worked set piece with a flick on the front post. they'll be buzzing. They'll be buzzing for this match now on Saturday night.
Yeah, it does feel like a big one for Waterford, Finney, as Garrett's spelling out there, like 7-point gap would be huge, even at this point of the season. I think you're on mute there, Vinny, are you? Sorry.
Yeah, for once in my life, I'm on mute. Yeah, I think it would be. It'd be a big, be a big gap, particularly from the psychological point of view. Whatever about losing and someone else wins, but you don't want to lose to the team as your sort of rivals as such, as in they will feel the team they've got to chase down more than anybody is Sligo. So. In that sense, that's where the old saying comes, the six-pointer, isn't it? So they feel they need to get after them. And I think Waterford are improving lately. I think they'll be raging that game was called off. I think that's...
Yeah, they had two draws before that match last Friday got called off, yeah.
Yeah, just slightly building towards something. So wouldn't shock me if Waterford won that game at all. You know, that way I think there's something building there, but... obviously, Sligo had a brilliant result up in Dalymount, but there's something I like about what John Daly's trying to do. It feels like he's getting closer and closer to getting his best team and his best way of playing on the pitch.
Yeah. And Steve, was it just Hakiki coming back from injury as well as a big boost to Sligo? I thought they would struggle to get goals this year. He actually started the season not too bad with a couple of goals, so he'll be a big boost for them, especially at home.
Yeah, and I go back to the pitch again. I know we've spoken about it before, but you know, Dalymount is in really good nick, and that might have suited Sligo Rovers as well Friday night. But they go back to the showgrounds, and all you know, as we know, that pitch is still trying to get back to its best. You know, coming towards the summertime, supporters will tell you themselves at Sligo Rovers. I'm not disrespecting anybody here, but that could be a problem for them as well. I just wonder who would adapt to those conditions better.
Yeah, I think both teams play good football. I mean, I've seen them live now. I think Waterford were really good when I saw them live, caused such very serious problems. So I think if it was another type of style of football coming on Saturday night, then I would say it would probably suit the other style. But no, I think it'll hinder both teams trying to play a bit of football, because both of them do play a decent brand of football.
Well, from Waterford, the team, to a particular Waterford man who is back on the bench for Shelburne. Unfortunately, he didn't get to play any football because their match as well was called off last Friday. But Vinny, I refer to Paddy Barrett, back on the bench for Shells. And by God, do they need him.
Yeah, they do. It hasn't been good for Shells. It hasn't. Just things haven't gone their way. They've had a lot of injuries. Everybody has injuries and it's part of the game. So you can't use that overly. But at the same time, it's been the key people, Barrett and Casey, two centre-halves, which is a big platform of what they try and do. So hasn't been a good start this season. I think, obviously, Rovers are much better adapted to going deep into the season last year. Shells, it's a little bit different because it's your first time for the club, the players, everybody. So all they can do is scrap away and try and qualify for Europe again. I don't think there's a title in them, or I don't see them being involved in that argument. Maybe they will, but I don't see it. But on paper, they're right up there with Pats and Bowles, for argument's sake. So you need to turn things around and around quickly. But touching on Paddy Barrett, he's pivotal to that.
Yeah, I think the break might have helped Chels as well, Garrett, because we know Joey's such a good coach, isn't he? And I think he'll have appreciated that time on the pitch just to, and whatever about Paddy Barrett, but maybe just trying to get the other players that have been kind of trying to hold the fort while he's gone, to get them kind of defensively better set for these games.
Yeah, 100%. I think they could be dark horses to make a late challenge, to be honest with you, when they get Barrett back and Casey. I don't know when he's going to be back. But I think just they're stacked with a lot of good players. I think he's kind of struggling the similar as Bowes are, and getting the best 11 on the best formation on the pitch and playing it week in, week out, and playing with a bit of fluidity that they know what each other are doing and they know what the game plan is. Because we know Joey, when he gets them humming like he did last year, they can be really, really effective. They can be good defensively. They can be unbelievable in the midfield area, especially the centre midfield area. and getting Boyd and Martin and Jarvis scoring goals, and Coote, Lundegaard, like, they're stacked with good players. So I think Paddy Barr will be a big part of that. I think if he can come back, we've seen it so many times. Paddy's not getting any younger. He's got to come back. They've got to basically ease him back into it. He can't come back and then get injured and then be out for another long period. That just can't happen. So once he gets back, get some game time under his belt, maybe creates a partnership with Rossi and Ledgewich, and gets them humming again. But I think, yeah, the break was at a good time for Shells. We'll see what they're all about now when they come to the Brandywell, or sorry, Derrygo up there.
Vinny, just like the Ledwich is an interesting one, because I just wonder, is he, what have you made of him and his development over the last couple of seasons? And is he the kind of player that could kind of slot into that big leadership role when Paddy Barrett isn't playing for Shells anymore? How do you see that kind of developing over the next couple of seasons?
Yeah, I get the sense he's already there in terms of that leadership. Like, he's not, I don't know what he's like in the sense of off the pitch. He's not someone who's gone around, you don't get the impression he's gone around screaming and shouting, like, and you know, making a big fuss. But people lead in different ways. Like, I get the sense, he's obviously a league title winner not that long ago. He was a huge part of that. And he's pivotal for them. I think if for example, Casey or Barrett were available and Ledridge had to be part of a tree with them, I think that's as good as they can be, you know, that way. So it's not a big deal for them. You just need to keep him fit. But he's been brilliant for them. He's been so important over a long period of time. Just such a calm and composed person on the ball and on the pitch. I presume he's like that off the pitch. But that doesn't mean you're not a leader. Not everyone has to be Terry Butcher. And not everyone has to scream and roar like Billy Cleary back in the day. A few people might laugh at that one. But you could hear, when Billy played for Galway, you could hear him in Sligo. He was that loud. But you don't have to be like that. It's okay if you are, and it's good for certain teams. But Ledwich is exceptional at what he does for Shells. It's a bit like, sorry, Steve-O, a bit like Gannon in there as well. When I think of Gannon, like, people think, you know, Gannon was one of these lads who, you know, most decorated player, blah, 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 blah. He must be this, must be that. But Gano's quiet as a mouse, but he does business right. He trains properly every day when he's fit and available. And that's just a different way of showing leadership. As I said, he very seldom, Gano, will put his head above the parapet and start a discussion around the place about styles and different things. But he'll always be there supporting people and around the place. So there's different leaders.
They are, of course, playing Derry City, excuse me, at Talca Park. And Gareth, I just wanted to address a social media post that set Derry City tongues wagging this week. No, not that one, folks. It's the one involving Tiernan Lynch's post-match interview. he gave an interview after Dundalk, Gareth, which they drew 2-2. Not a bad result when we think about how well Dundalk are doing. But in the interview, he says, we went a goal down and yada, yada, yada. And you're kind of thinking, there was a lot of Derry City supporters reacting to that. Not very well, Gareth, I would say. And they're just probably, and I can absolutely understand, they're starting to ask the question, is this fella's head really in the game here?
Yeah, no, and listen, we've all been there. The man is under immense pressure. We know that. He doesn't need me and Vinny and yourself talking about it. He's obviously completely forgot himself and got the scoreline mixed up. He's trying to get some sort of clarity in his head to explain what has happened in the game, because let's be honest, they were very poor in the game, extremely poor. The second half was as bad as I've seen them play in Dundalk. And I don't want to say too much bad about Derry. I don't want to take away from Dundalk as well. Dundalk were absolutely excellent and probably were unlucky not to win the game with Kenny hitting the post. But yeah, those things happen, Steve-O. There's so much going on in his head. He's under so much pressure. It's a slip of the tongue. I don't think it's any insight into his dedication to the club or the job or anything like that. It's just a slip of the tongue that I'm sure he regrets now. And it's just adding more pressure to an already pressurized situation. But the games just are coming thick and fast. last. They're obviously shells away now. Then they've got Rovers at home in Celtic Park, which isn't going to be easy. So it's not getting any better, unfortunately, Steve-O. The game was very one-sided in the second half. Derry obviously did well. They didn't start the game well again, which I was really disappointed with. The McDade goes through one-on-one very early on. Derry then get a nice goal down the left, but it didn't get much better after that. But I wouldn't read too much into to Tiernan's comments.
Yeah, look, and listen, we all make sips. I've done it myself, you know, when you're kind of working on radio and that kind of thing, so you can absolutely forgive someone for something like that. And I can totally accept what you're saying there. Just on the, like, and listen, we do talk about Tiernan Lynch quite a lot. Like, is there a point where the players need to start looking at themselves here as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you. And it's not a, it becomes, I mean, Vinny will know better than me, but you can only do so much. But the players on the pitch, you've got to motivate them. You've got to get them working for you. But the players just don't seem to be, like, we all know the talent. If you go through the squad, there's lots of talent there. There's lots of good players. There's lots of experience. It's not as if they're full of young boys that are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. These guys have all hundreds of games under their belt. It's just not working. And the players have got to look at themselves as well. They've got to take responsibility, especially the senior players in the club. They've got to, whether it's getting together with the management. I mean, you always hear about crisis meetings and player meetings and all that there. I always think it's better as a collective. Yes, if the players want to go away and have a chat and say, listen, what the hell's going on here? What's wrong? Why are we not happy? Why are we not going out onto the pitch, banging our chest, going, we're ready for this? And if it is something wrong with the management team or something that they're doing, it's got to be communicated. There seems to be a lack of communications. I mean, I like watching people, right, and outside of what's going on the pitch. And there seems to be a lot of simple things that you would take for granted that aren't decided before the team goes out on the pitch. And that tells to me that there's a lack of communication between everyone. So I think that's something that they've got to address before they even get down to winning games.
Geez, Vinny, maybe they just need to all go out on the lash together.
I'm being kind of
serious here, you know, just like, just go out and go on the lash together and have a good bloody day out and, you know, just kind of try and find that, you know, togetherness, that spirit maybe to, they're all getting well paid here. Like, you know, they're, as we all know, they're well paid players. Like it's, you're playing your, you know, it's, there's so many young lads and young girls around the Brandywell that love to be playing for their local club and they've got the dream job, you know, just go out there and try and start enjoying your football once again. I don't know how you fix it, Vinny.
Yeah, I think Gareth will tell you, going on the bat, that works sometimes, but other times it doesn't work. So you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. I think Gareth touched on something there, and a little bit of there's a little bit of second guessing, and that's because, call a spade a spade, Gareth. I think that's because systems changes the, you know, changes in mid-game, all of that leads to a little bit of confusion. And I don't think they've found the right way of playing, stuck to it. And you can always make slight tweaks here and there, but it just seems a lot of stuff going on, and they haven't got an identity yet under Tiernan as it stands. And that leads to indecision on the pitch and players looking at benches and looking at each other. And I think they've got to go back to basics before it's too late for Tiernan.
Yeah. So that's Shells and Derry at Talca Park Friday night. We've also got St. Patrick's Athletic going away to Drogheda United. And, you know, in the past I might have said, look, that's not really an ideal place to be going when you've just come off the back of a chastening defeat to the champions and the now leaders. But, like, Drogs, they're defending just, I don't know what's gone on this year, Vinny. Like, they're usually so ties at the back under Kevin Doherty. Good goals conceded record last year. I think it was only 38 goals conceded. They're already up to 14 at this point in the season. Is that an issue? Is it like, or what is it you're kind of looking at with Dundalk? Because it's gone a long way back since they've had a win.
Yeah, what you've got to be careful of is if a football team or club is that you've got a real set, definite way of playing. And people will say, well, we knew about this a year and a half ago, and Drogheda haven't overly changed in that year. But eventually teams find ways of sort of, first of all, stopping you So I think part of the problem for Drogheda is not getting that fourth goal, second goal, and then teams start making changes. So I think part of the problem is when you do the same thing week in, week out over a long period of time, eventually teams cutting onto you a little bit. So there's an element to that. You can see teams heading there. We done the Bowls game a couple of weeks ago, stable one, and Bowls went up, got a clean sheet, and you could tell that was celebrated by the Bowls players because, and they've worked really hard on those set pieces, those second phases, all of that stuff. Now, I have to keep saying it to defend myself. They're not just all about that. I get it. But that is a huge, once you stop that, it's a huge part of it. Like the Brandon Kavanagh, Mark Doyle, they've all had big moments in games over the last few weeks and haven't taken them. So because they haven't got the first goal, ultimately then they're under a little bit of pressure under, and the floodlights are on that back three or back five as it is. So they've got to get the first goal to give the defenders a hand and then trust the processes of the defenders. So they've got, like, nothing has changed in terms of the back three generally. They've tried a few different bits and pieces, but by and large, it's the same three. So you've just got to get the fourth goal, believe it or not, which, even Kevin, I've heard his interview, he's not really talking about that part. He is a little bit. But I'm saying, Gerrard will tell you, get the fourth goal, be 1-0 up. Changes everything. Change the whole psychology. It's something to hang on to. Feels like they're chasing a little bit at the moment, and that's why ultimately make mistakes defensively.
Yeah. It's, I suppose, maybe a good game for Pats in a way. Gareth, there was something I was thinking about those regards their team selection. Like, you can go with Edmondson up front, who I'd imagine would really relish a battle with Conor Keighley or whoever it is at the back for Drogheda United. But then I think back, there was a moment in that Rovers-Pats game, Vinny might remember this, but Joe and Ang fires out this amazing ball out to the left. I think it was out kind of the inside left channel. Max Matt had come off the bench, rose up in the air, and he took this ball down on his chest, and it was just a magnificent bit of skill, brought it down onto his right boot and just carries on playing. It was absolutely brilliant. And I'm just thinking, this could be a brilliant weapon against Drogheda United. Joe and Ang's distribution is sensational, whether it be from his hands, off the ground. He is absolutely brilliant. Possibly the best in the league with regards to distribution from a goalkeeper. How do they use that? And do you think maybe Max Mana could be a contender to start for this game as well?
Yeah, I think he'd be chomping at the bit. I mean, he'll have thought that coming day Pats, he was going to play, he was going to score loads of goals, and he was going to shoot his way to the World Cup squad. It just hasn't worked out. Obviously, Keane's injured now. Edmondson has been exceptional. Yeah. So there's nothing Max can do about that. He's got the nod when they're playing one up front. When you're going to play against somewhere like Shamrock Rovers, there's only going to be one spot, and Edmondson would probably get that right now. But Max Mata, I mean, is there an opportunity to play the two of them up front? They've done it before. Keenan and Edmondson played against Derry most recently as well, so he's gone that way. Will there be a 3-5-2? So I think I would love to see them. I would love to see them kind of go after the frailties of Drogheda at the back. I think it would be a really brave decision. How do you get the best out of an Ang's distribution? You just play at a high tempo. You play quickly. When he gets it, you be available. We used to do it with Gavin or Jared Doherty, sorry, when he was at Derry. We knew that if he took a cross or took a corner or a guy was going through and he came out and sweeped it up, we knew that everybody had to be alert, because an Ang's distribution, I agree with you, Steve-O, it's the best in the league, no question. He's really good at doing it quickly, whether it's out of his hands, a half volley on the ground, or he's able to slow the game down as well. He's I don't know if I never talked about this, but his goalkeeping IQ is incredible. He's ahead of the rest in that regard. So I'm sure Max Mata is chomping at the bit. So it'd be great to see him against Drogheda.
Vinny, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think I thought he was exceptional in the game the other day. His distribution really good. I just think Pats have got to do something a little bit different on up the draw there, and maybe
the two up top. Are you thinking that, or
I'm thinking two up top, Mata and Edmondson. Yeah, and sort of that. If they're going to play with back three up there, it's a three sort of 5-2, and put Drogheda's back three under a bit of pressure and play under frailties. That's the only way for me I see them being able to play. That sort of box and all of that stuff in midfield just didn't work last week, so it's got to go back to to what they're good at. But I think I beat Brave, and Stephen is generally brave, and I go with McClelland as one wing back and have a real go, James Brown as the other one, and get Keane Levy into the midfield with whatever that combination, Nugent, Bagley and Keane Levy. Something a bit like, when you've got three at the back, you don't need two sitters in front of them. They've got enough about them. So just be positive and going. I think they could badly need a win, Pat. So I think that's a huge game for both teams.
And, yeah. And just on that, lad, you mentioned Hoare was injured. What was the injury there? Do we think he's going to be out long term?
There hasn't been any update from the club as of yet, but it did seem like it was, you know, it looked like it was some sort of muscle injury, and he was kind of like, he tried to run it off initially, but after a few minutes he was like, I got to come off here. So look, Rivasti's not the worst. He's not the worst player to be coming in for Sean Hoare, although he had he had a good partnership there with Joe Redmond. But Tom Gravosti, a more than capable stand-in. Dundalk against Galway then, lads. That's the last game of the week. And they played out a 2-2 draw. It doesn't seem like that long ago. Burnsy getting an equaliser against his former club, Galway United. And again, like you wouldn't be surprised, would you? Another scoring draw here between these two sides as well, because I don't think we've seen the best of Piero. I know he's still trying to get to full fitness, Gareth, but I could certainly see these two sides going hammer and tongs at each other on Friday night.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's so refreshing to be able to talk about Galway, about free scoring midfielders and forwards and stuff like that. I mean, and Dundalk in the second half and Friday night were exceptional, really good and relentless as well. It's not as if they were going in waves, or sorry, like a basketball match. They weren't letting Derry attack at all. They were getting the ball, they were recycling, and it was just relentless. So they've got players scoring goals as well. So, I mean, I wouldn't back against a 2-2 draw here.
Yeah. Tyreek Wilson getting back-to-back goals. Vinny, he's had an interesting career from Bohemians to Shelburne, won the league with Chels, and now he's with Dundalk, I suppose, trying to stay on top. Press a player when he's on his game. He just needs to be consistent, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I think what Dundalk have done is, he's another example of that sort of, I call them League of Ireland players. It's a bit obvious, but you know what I mean by that. Instead of taking chances on people, someone that's experienced knows their jobs. They have a lot of those players, and Kieran is being able to maximise them. But go back to Dundalk real quickly. Ruby has been brilliant for them. Aiden bedded by Kenny and Horgan, but he's been really, really good and difficult to mark for people. So they have to make hay when the sun shines, because they will have a difficult run over at some stage. So, but it's great to see them locked in what they're doing.
Because you know Kieran Kildow so well, Vinny, to ask you, is there anything you see with the Ruby that you would think that looks like something that Kildow has worked with him on?
I'm not sure. I think a different type of players. Ruby's more mobile than what Kieran would have been. Not that Kieran was sluggish, but far from it. But a Ruby will work the channels, and he'll occupy centre halves and leave spaces for other people. Kieran was more was different than that, but there's no doubt having a manager that knew how to score goals and take big moments would definitely help you. But I think they're slightly different type of players. Ruben's just on a brilliant crest of a wave at the moment. There's very few strikers in the Premier Division on better form than him currently, if any.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been brilliant. Sorry, Gareth, I thought you were going to say something there.
Yeah, no, I can't get over how good he's been, honestly. It looks as if he's got everything. Now, maybe he's in a bit of a purple patch. He could add a few more goals to it, but he was exceptional. Even his build-up play, he was involved in both goals. Him and Tariq Wilson were involved in both goals. Tariq will probably, everybody will be talking about his goal, but his cross for the equaliser for Tehan's header was exceptional. Trying to get the whip on that type of ball is really difficult. It generally goes the other way, and he's just played it into an incredible area. And again, Ruby was holding it up and passed it to Tariq. So Ruby looks, I just can't wait to see more of him, to be honest with you. And if he adds a few more goals to it, I would say there'll be a few suitors who'll be looking for him.
Yeah, 100%. Should be a decent game between those two sides, Galway United and Dundalk. Well, lads, it's been brilliant. Where are you off to? Vinny, you're off to Tallaght Stadium. You heading down to Tallaght,
Gareth? I'll be in Tallaght, yeah.
Great stuff, yeah. I think I might go to Tallaght myself, Vinny.
Yeah, I'll spot you a cup of tea.
Well, listen, lads, enjoy the football. Thank you for listening or watching to the podcast this week, and we'll chat to you on the LOI pod on Off the Ball on News Talk next week.
The LOI pod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.